Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Ryan Gallagher, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have got Ryan Gallagher from Criterion Cast is joining. This is the second time you've been on Fat Guys proper. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
You did the Oscar show, not this year, but the last year. I don't think I did an Oscar show this year.
Yeah, I don't think you did either. But yeah, that was the first time that I appeared with you on this show. But you have been on our show a couple times also.
I have been on Criterion Cast a couple times. Thank you again. It's always fun to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's just go ahead and we'll talk a little more about Ryan before we go to the movies, but I want to give the contact information. You can go to fatguysinthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys in the Movies, and we pop right up. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM, or you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or if you feel so inclined, you can leave a voicemail, 740-205-6456. We also have a new sponsor on Fat Guys. It is Hover, which is a place if you want to register cheap URLs. I mean, if you just want a really inexpensive URL for like 50 URL, I call them URLs. I know. People always, what? What are you, an idiot? Because I heard you. I heard you scoff at my pronunciation. But yeah, if you want like a URL for about $15 a year, it's no frills. It's not a you don't get emails or whatever, that kind of thing. It's just if you just need to hold on to the title, you can register through that. You can go to hover.com/fatguys, and you automatically will get 10% off your order. Without, you don't have to enter a promo code or anything. Just go to hover.com/fatguys, and you can register your URLs.
And at this point in time, like, you should really have your own domain name. Like, you can have your Facebook page and your Twitter page, but really you don't want them to have all your content. You want to be able to have everything at your own place, you know, kevincarr.com or whatever.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to, when people say, what's your website? You don't want to say, my website is facebook.com/whatever.
Exactly.
Because God knows what's going to happen to Facebook in the next couple of years. Because it could turn into the Microsoft. It already is kind of turning into the Microsoft of the internet. But anyways, that's our new sponsor. So, Ryan, tell us who you are and what you've done. I mean, I know you were on the show 6 or 7 months ago.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was like August of last year, around the time Scott Pilgrim was coming out. But basically, I'm the editor in chief and co-host of Criterion Cast. We're a podcast where every week we talk about various news and new release items related to the Criterion Collection and kind of art house and foreign cinema in general. And each week we, you know, cover a different release that Criterion has put out. They're a DVD and Blu-ray distributor that is known for their, you know, lavish special editions of classic cinema, things like Seven Samurai, Seventh Seal, stuff like that. So if you don't already know them, then you should, because if you're listening to this podcast,
seek out Criterion titles. And even if you hate the movie, and you love special features, there's plenty of stuff.
Sure, they're every single notoriously they have special editions of Armageddon and The Rock. So even if you don't like those movies, you can, you know, dig through hours of special features on those releases.
Are they moving there? Like I'll tell you this: I have the Armageddon Criterion disc, but it's not 16:9 mastered. It's a 4:3 mastered disc.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, early on, those were some of the problems of Criterion Collection, but they have since become kind of the gold standard in terms of putting out, you know, the definitive edition, you know, in terms of audio and visual quality for movies now.
Oh, it was one right up there for Blu-ray for DVDs, but just one Blu-ray. It was just a hair ahead of Blu-rays and more importantly, 8 widescreen TVs. Are they going to be? Is Criterion going to start kicking out some of their older titles, like say, just to use Armageddon as an example? Are they going to put that either? Because I know Touchstone released the Blu-ray with almost nothing on it.
It depends. It depends on the distributor, like who owns the rights to it, essentially. I know that when Disney put out the new Blu-ray of The Rock, they licensed a bunch of the supplements that they had, that Criterion had produced. So there is the chance, but they are going back and going through their early titles and remastering them for Blu-ray, and they look amazing.
Awesome. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Let's also now move ahead to the movie reviews this week. We actually have three movies we're going to talk about. One of them's the Judy Moody movie, and then we got Super 8. And later we're going to talk about Tree of Life. And I think that's good. I've waited a little bit because it's let it be out there for a little bit. I also wanted somebody who would, I guess, would be a good foil with me to discuss Tree of Life. And Ryan's the perfect person for that.
Oh, thank you.
But let's talk a little bit about Judy Moody and the not Bummer Summer. This popular children's book character Judy Moody comes to the big screen as a girl trying to defeat the summertime blahs.
I, Judy Moody, am ready for the ultimate summer, and it doesn't include my brother Stink.
Your mom and I have to fly to California, and you and Stink are staying here.
What? Your Aunt Opal's coming!
Hey!
Whoa, we came up with a plan. Introducing the Judy Moody Mega Rare Not Bummer Summer Dare. So we do these dares, and for each one we get 10 thrill points. The thrill race is on!
Now, Ryan, do you know anything about Judy Moody?
I don't, but I just had a daughter born this past May, so I have a feeling that in a few years I'm probably going to know all about this this book series. But now
10 years, yeah, 10 years talking to you, be like, oh, I can tell you everything. I can tell you every single title of Judy Moody.
Right. No, I don't know. I mean, you don't have any girls, I don't think. Is this predominantly like a series for girls as far as you know?
Well, you know it is, but my oldest, who's turning 10 actually next week, he was very familiar with the series. Unfortunately, they didn't screen it for us. It's Relativity Media, and they've recently sort of branched out on their own for distribution. Usually they like paired with like Sony or something like that, or Universal, but they still do on their DVD releases, but their theatrical releases, they're kind of going striking out on their own with huge things like Skyline and Season of the Witch. But so they didn't screen it for us here, and it was kind of a shame because my kids wanted to see it. My oldest son was like, yeah, he knew the characters. He knew Stink was her brother. He knew about Aunt Opal. So he was aware of the story. But then again, he's a big reader, and his fourth grade class, they were crazy. His fourth grade teacher is a nationally known reading instructor. I mean, she like speaks and stuff like that, and does national programs. So she has a very strong focus on reading. So I'm not surprised that my oldest son knows about it. But yeah, definitely, it's sort of like, you know how like the Ramona books are about girls, but boys will read them too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that's I think what it is. It looks cute. I'm not real. Like I said, I'm not familiar with them as a book series, but it looks fun enough. I'm sure it's going to be like 80 minutes long, and it'll be stupid and silly, and it'll play like a Nickelodeon movie, and that's okay because it's made for kids.
Absolutely.
And Heather Graham still is holding her looks, and she's damn near 40, so she plays Aunt Opal. And she's okay. You can sit there. And I honestly think they threw Heather Graham in there basically to be like, this is for all the dads that have to take their kids. It's the Leela character from Doctor Who. They're just like, let's throw in Heather Graham in shorts. And then the dads will be like, okay, honey, I'll take her. That's fine. I'll take her to go see this.
Well, we'll see if I go. You know, now that I have a daughter, I don't really get out to the theater very much. And so this isn't high on my list of things to see. But who knows? Maybe I'll end up seeing it when it ends up on Netflix or, you know, whatever.
You'll have it on DVD in a couple of years, I'm pretty sure. You'll see it a couple times. So
yeah, we'll see.
And yes, congratulations to Ryan for having his daughter. But we got to go on a break. And when we get back, we'll talk more movies.
Okay.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. That's one thing we have to give a preemptive suck to Judy Moody because they did not screen it. That's contractually obligated from the Fat Guys realm. But Ryan mentioned something in the last segment, and which I didn't get a chance to mention. I should have, because I'm an insensitive idiot. But congratulations, Ryan is now Daddy Gallagher.
Aww.
So it's your daughter Miranda was born 5 weeks ago, right?
That's correct. She was born on May 1st.
Wow, May Day girl.
Yeah.
Huh? So if Ryan sounds exceptionally tired,
yeah, I'm not getting a whole lot of sleep these days.
he's entering a larger world where it's just this tiny little creature just demands everything. So I wish you and your family well.
Thank you.
And congratulations. And she's adorable, by the way.
Yeah, I've been trying to put as many pictures online to make everyone, you know, as happy as I am. But
yeah, well, you know, you put up one like the other night that was, you know, it said Miranda at 5 weeks, and she's just so cute. She's very, very cute. And I'm going to tell you this as a parent, and you'll recognize this. And I can say this because, as we proved, as we already said, I'm an insensitive jerk.
I think I know where you're going with this.
your kids, my kids, I love my kids. Everyone else's kids, I'm not so wild about, you know. I love my kids. And my kids, you know, I get my baby pictures of my kids and they're adorable. But I have to admit, newborns are weird looking creatures. But I have to say, and I mean this honestly, Miranda's a very adorable newborn.
Thank you. I think
she's very adorable.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm biased and all, but I totally agree. I think she's really, really adorable.
Yeah, but even, I mean, even my sons—they were cute and all, but they looked a little freaky until they got to be about 2 months old, and then suddenly, pop, they just became these little cherubs, you know?
Yeah.
But you've been on Facebook, you know, you have friends where they're like, "Look at my kid," and you're just like, "Gah!" And you're just like, "Oh my god, what is that thing? Is that human? What you do, shave a monkey?" And yeah, and they're just like, and then all their friends are like, "Oh, she's just a little angel." And you're like, "No, she's not."
Yeah, and you can't say that. You can't say that. You can't like leave a comment on their Facebook page saying, "Yeah, your baby is not as cute as you think she is.
Your baby is nasty looking." I understand the whole genetics thing that you're going to genetically want to like what's yours, but yeah, I mean, I've known people, and the kids are just hideous. But no, you have a very adorable daughter.
So. Well, thank you, sir.
You earned the seal, the Kevin Carr seal of approval of child making.
I will make her a T-shirt that says that.
Oh, good. I'll send you an Oscar statue with my head just stapled onto it. Anyways, we're going to talk about our next movie. Speaking of children, the next movie is Super 8, in which something happens with kids catching something they see on a Super 8 camera in somewhere America.
There's a lot of sums in that statement.
And action!
An eastbound freighter derailed. What the cargo was on that freighter, we don't know.
We can't tell anyone.
I know.
I understand you have concerns about our cargo.
Colonel, there isn't anything else that I should know, is there?
I can assure you the answer is no.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And I can say this having seen the movie. There's a whole bunch of spoilers out there. There's already... And like, the studio is really squinchy. Didn't they threaten people who saw it like really super early? They were doing early screenings, like junket screenings, like 3 weeks ago, and they're like, you can't talk about it at all.
Well, I think that's J.J. Abrams' MO in terms of how he wants to present his movies. He doesn't want very much out there. I mean, he was very quiet about Star Trek until, you know, a few months before that started coming out. We really didn't see much or hear anything about it. You know, Cloverfield was a lot the same way. He was producing that. So this is, you know... I've only seen the trailer. I haven't read any reviews yet. I've seen people talking about it on Twitter, but I don't know very much apart from the plot that I've seen in the trailer. And I haven't seen any, luckily no one has kind of spoiled whatever, you know, whatever monster thing might be in it. You know, I think
for it? Wolverine has a cameo in it. I'm just kidding.
Man, I totally had that spoiled for me reading. And,
did you?
Yeah. I was going through news stories one day and suddenly someone had put that as a headline, like, you know, spoiling that cameo. And I was pretty bummed about it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that well, the thing with Super 8 is it is the kind of movie you want to see with the least amount of information possible. And not because here's the thing. If you watch the movie. There aren't really any big surprises. If you watch the movie, you're like, I kind of see where this is going. You know, it's not like you're like, it's not this sudden reveal. You know, it's not like when they did Pirates at World's End. And I remember Disney like got a reviewer fired because he talked about plot twists, which I don't know how. There's so many plot twists in that movie that you couldn't keep them straight. But this one, it's nice to see it play out and be like, oh, that is where they're going. You know what I mean? As opposed to saying, this is what it's about. It's very easy to just blurb it and say, this is a movie about, and you've just told kind of the whole bit of the movie.
Yeah. I guess the problem with this is just that it's so hard. I guess, you know, you're putting a lot of faith in the names behind it. You're putting a lot of faith in that people know who J.J. Abrams is and that they, you know, they obviously, most people will know who Steven Spielberg is, but he's not, since he's not directing it, then maybe his name won't carry as much weight in terms of people looking at that trailer and saying, oh, this is something I want to go see. You know, hopefully... I mean, I'm sure that this is a movie that I'm going to love, but I just have this nagging feeling that that not many people are, you know what it is or why they should go see it, and that it might not end up doing very well.
Yeah, well, it does suffer from the Hollywood stigma of not having a big name face star.
Yeah,
it doesn't have a big name face on it. It has names to it, but all the names are J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg. You know, they don't have, you know. Seth Rogen's not. Thank God. Seth Rogen isn't like walking, what are you going to say at this camera?
They wouldn't be able to make a poster of this film with one guy's face on it, and that's all that it is.
There's a reason why the poster is like a shadowy figure like 500 yards away. But the thing is, it's a good movie. That's the bottom line. It's a good movie. And for somebody like me and you, you're younger than I am. The movie takes place in 1979. I was 8 in 1979, so I was a little younger than the characters in the movie, but there's a lot of nostalgia that just the set design and the production design. It's like, I'm like, I've sat in living rooms like that with that stuff on the kitchen table and these kind of things on the mantle, and I've been in bedrooms. My friends' bedrooms look like these kids' bedrooms with the posters and the knickknacks and that kind of thing. So it does tap into that nostalgia. I don't know if that's going to be enough to carry it, but for somebody like me at my age, it's awesome.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that sounds great, but I guess that's another thing that they're not really selling in the trailer or the advertising for it. It doesn't seem like they're telling you this is what type of nostalgia it's going to, you know, trigger in your memories. So hopefully people like you will go see it and recognize that, but it's, you know, I guess that's just an added bonus to the screening.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it, it really taps into the, and it's totally deliberate. And this is why I think Spielberg's name is very appropriate on it, is it totally taps into those early to mid 80s Steven Spielberg family adventures. Although it's intense. It's more intense. It's sort of like, I described it in show prep. I said, it's sort of like E.T. on meth, where it's just really intense at times. Cause you know, there is if you've seen the trailers, there's a train that does crash at one point. I don't think I'm giving anything away with that. That is an intense scene. It's a fantastic scene. And there's a lot of really cool stuff with it. Now, with that said, it's not without its flaws. It has some plot things. It has some real slowdowns. It starts like a Disney movie with the death of the kid's mother has died. That's not a spoiler as well, because you literally find out in the first shot.
Sure.
Okay, or second shot, I guess, sort of second shot. But it is that. Here's the deal. Anytime they're dealing with the dead mother, you can go get popcorn.
That's when you can take your bathroom break.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it lays that on a little thick. And it's this arc that goes through the story. So they keep, either there's a scene where you're watching them, like there's a dialogue scene, you're like, oh, this is them talking about his feelings with his dead mother. I have to use the restroom, you know, and you have to go. But I mean, it's really a fun adventure movie, and it taps into that Goonies mentality where you have these kids, and it's got a great cast of kids, and they have real good chemistry. And I will say this again, without giving anything away, easily the best part of the movie is the ending credits, because it's just a brilliantly done thing on the ending credits. I'm not going to say anything. Oh, there's a lot of lens flares in it too. But if you saw Star Trek,
did he learn anything from his lens flare, you know, overuse in Star Trek? Did he tone it down a little bit?
He toned it down, but every now and then he'll have these just like blue lens flare just cutting through half the screen, which you're just like, well, that's the cinematographer, but it's a little silly. But it's a fun movie. It's a neat movie, and it's something you can take a kid to. I wouldn't take a 5-year-old, but it's definitely a good movie. I'm going to say it totally rocks. So yeah, go check out Super 8. This weekend.
42 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This is the infamous middle segment.
Ooh. This is the segment. Normally, this is the segment where, well, it still is the segment where it's not aired on the radio. So you can swear and we can talk about dirty things. But the thing is, you know, this is the thing. Ryan, I love Ryan, but Ryan's so high class that he's not going to just like drop down some swear words just because he can. Unlike I've had other guests that I say, they go, can I swear in this segment? And then they just lay out this string of profanity just to start. But I don't see you as that kind of guy.
Well, Kevin, I have read your review of Tree of Life, so there might be some a little later once we get into our discussion of that film.
Yes. Well, actually, we can. You want to just jump into that now before we do box office and everything?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about Tree of Life, which is Terrence Malick's new film about everything and nothing. That's just my review. So anyways, let's play the trailer and we'll come back.
There are two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow.
We're alligators.
You'll be grown before that tree is tall.
Father, mother, always you wrestle inside me.
I'm going to give you first crack at this because I know you like, you are... I'm assuming you're a Terrence Malick fan.
Yeah, I'm a Terrence Malick fan. I mean, I have problems with all of the films that he's made. Some of them have editing issues that I would fix if I could. Others have pacing issues. This movie is, you know, The Tree of Life is a movie that I really enjoyed, but I definitely see problems with it, although not as many problems apparently as what you have.
You read my Film School Rejects review of that, is what you're saying.
Yeah, a very scathing review. I would almost dismissive.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not what you call a Terrence Malick fan. I actually haven't seen many of his movies. I've seen two of them. I've seen Tree of Life. I've seen The New World. Now everyone always says you got to see Badlands. And I'm like, that's fine. At some point, I will watch that. I need to sort of purge his movies from my system. I got to have that. I got to have like that 6 month cleanse. with like, like drugs and stuff like that to get them out of my system. Since I just saw Tree of Life not too long ago.
I guess having seen his other films, you definitely, seeing his other films will help you prepare for what type of filmmaker he is. But I guess, you know, I guess first off, for any listeners who are going to see this movie, I would just say, don't go in with any kind of expectations, like, period. Don't go in with any kind of expectations about what, a traditional narrative in a film is.
Because it's not. It's not a traditional narrative.
Yeah, not at all. And it's, you know...
It's an impressionistic poetry on screen kind of thing. Yeah,
and I think if you go in with that, knowing, like, what it is, and you just let the film kind of wash over you, then you'll enjoy it. If you go in there expecting there to be, like, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and have, you know, character developments and character arcs and stuff. Like, I mean, there's some subtle character developments, but it's more in kind of like a, like you're saying, like a grand scale.
I don't know if I'd call those subtle character developments.
Well, that's true.
They're pretty heavy-handed at times.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think, but I don't... I mean, I think this is the... I think he's told the story that he wanted to tell, and he didn't compromise and try to make it, you know, a traditional movie in the way that a lot of other films are kind of churned out in a factory.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I will disagree with you on that in the sense that I would say go and watch the trailer. Watch the full trailer. Go find it on iTunes or whatever, or YouTube or wherever it is. Watch it. Whatever you think it's going to be, that's exactly what it's going to be. Because I know people that watch that trailer and are like, oh my God, that's going to be a masterpiece. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be poetic. It's going to be beautiful imagery and blah, 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 blah. And they went and saw it and that's what they thought. Yeah. And I don't want to take that away from anybody because if you like the movie, for God's sake, like the movie. That's great. You know, to each his own. But if you watch the movie and you say, that looks like a big pretentious pile of poo, it will probably be a big pretentious pile of poo when you watch it. And that's my problem with it. It from the opening frame which starts with sort of like this sparkling light, almost like a flame, but like blurry and stuff, and this sort of this whispering behind it.
Yeah,
it kind of lost me from that because I was like, okay, this just looks like something out of film school, where somebody's just playing with light and everything, and there's a place for that.
Yeah,
but I don't have a taste for it.
Yeah, I mean, his movies are definitely for a specific type of, I guess, film goer. They're definitely not for mass audiences, and I don't think. And it's interesting that it's being built up the way that it has, and it's got so much hype surrounding it. It seems like this is one of the first Terrence Malick movies that I'm aware of. I mean, he's only done, you know, five movies, think, so yeah. It's not like his movies are. He's not like he's a super popular, well known director. But for some reason, this movie has managed to build up a lot of hype, you know, online and, I don't even know.
But it's for Malick fans. I mean, if you're going to say, I want to see the new Brad Pitt movie, and you go see this, you are gonna hate yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you don't go in thinking this is like the next Brad Pitt, you know, blockbuster, and I guess in some ways it's kind of, you know, similar in some ways in that, you know, to Inglourious Basterds, where that movie was kind of sold on Brad Pitt, but then it was a lot more than that. Although I agree, like, and I know what you're about to say, it's not like that in that it's, you know, Inglourious Basterds was much more entertaining.
But I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah,
Inglourious Basterds was, you wanted, and that was actually one of my complaints about Inglourious Basterds was, I'm like, I want to see him killing Nazis. That's what all the trailers were. Killing Nazis. That's what we do. We kill Nazis. And then, like, well, we get, like, there's one scene, we kill a Nazi. And then all these other people are going to talk for like three. And that's fine because the movie stands on its own.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just did not fit. And that's more Weinstein's because they're idiots anyways. But this is where I do take issue with it being poetic and impressionistic. And I understand it's all this existential because, I mean, it goes all over the place. It's like there are these kids, this family, and they're having fun dancing around the front yard. And then suddenly we're at the beginning of the universe, and there's you know, the sun generating heat, and then suddenly there's dinosaurs. And I mean, it's like all over the map. And I get that's the whole interconnection, existential, blah, blah, blah. But I saw somebody say this, and I think it may have been, I can't remember whether it was about Tree of Life or New World. It was one of the two. And somebody said, if Malick could just resist putting everything he wants on the screen and just be a little more restrained, it would make a better film. And because there's things that he puts in there to just, from an artistic standpoint, did not work. And I'm in particular, I'm going to use one in particular. There's a scene where, is it Jessica Chastain? Is that her name?
Yes. She plays the mother of the family.
Yeah. She has one of the kids I forget which one of the kids, but he's like a toddler, and she's swinging around in the front yard, and she points up to the sky and literally says, "That's where God lives." and that is actually where it lost me as an art film, because I'm like, that is so cliche to me. That's where I was just like, oh my gosh, that's not subtle. That's not even quality. It's so cheap the way they put it in.
That is a good point, although I would say that the theme of God is kind of sown throughout the entire movie. I mean, it starts out with a quote from the Book of Job. There's, you know, a lot of heavy religious imagery in it, and I would say, and then also towards the end, you know, whatever that ending sequence means.
The tantric yoga.
Well, and then just the idea of, you know, whatever is going on the beach towards the end. There's a lot of religious imagery throughout the whole film. But I don't think that, for me, that wasn't too heavy-handed. And I think that it worked for the story that he was telling it, the way that he was telling it. Yeah. I guess for me, some problems that I had was just like, I felt, you know, there were some kind of hyped aspects of it. And I don't want to give this away because I don't want to ruin the experience for some viewers. But there were things that I felt were completely unnecessary during that whole, beginning of the Earth sequence that were so unnecessary. And then there were also a lot of, swooping cameras that I didn't like at all. And they were just so distracting.
Yeah, I will say this about Tree of Life, and this is Malick in general. What's funny is after I saw it, I went back and I read my New World review.
Yeah,
and it was actually kind of humorous for me to read because I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like it's kind of like just the same criticisms of a different movie. His movie, you cannot deny, he's like Michael Bay in one sense, because they're not very similar films. You know, they make very different movies, but both of them have impeccably looking films.
Yeah.
They are both very visual directors in very different ways, but you can guarantee they're going to look great. It's just, I don't know. It's so you get that, but yeah, for me, I was just like, oh man. And then the slippery slope started with that opening shot of the flame, which to me just that just felt so cliche. and for that respect of a director who's had, even though he's only done five films, has had a career that's spanned decades, I'm just like, to stoop to that in their first shot. And then I just swiddled down and just kept going and going and just kind of just fell apart. So by the time it ended, I hated it. I mean, just hated it. And I gave it an F on Film School Rejects.
Yeah.
And to many people's chagrin.
Well, I I didn't hate it as much as you did, but I mean, it definitely is not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. Uh-huh. But for me, I thought it was beautiful, and it's something that I want to see again, just so that I can experience it again. It's probably a movie that I'm going to want to own eventually on Blu-ray.
Okay, I'm definitely going to, at some point, I'm going to check out his other films. Yeah. I've got Thin Red Line in my Netflix queue.
Yeah, The Thin Red Line is great. I mean, The Thin Red Line and New World are probably more of the two of the more narrative heavy films that he's done. His other movie, you know, Badlands, I guess Badlands is a pretty traditional film. Days of Heaven is a little bit more in the style of The New World. Although that one felt like he chopped it down, you know. Days of Heaven. Okay. Days of Heaven is considered, you know, one of his best works by a lot of people. It's, you know, it's in the Criterion Collection, so is Thin Red Line. But he's just, I think for me, Days of Heaven just felt really overly edited to the point where it's like, you know, very abstract and not, you know, like the narrative kind of flies by and it's a lot of it seems unnecessary. And that's kind of how I felt with Tree of Life. Just felt like that he didn't really focus on a story, although I guess you could just say that he wasn't intending to. Like, this is the way that he wanted to tell this story.
Oh, I don't think he wanted to tell a story at all. I think that was let's put it this way. He completely achieved what he set out to do.
Yeah.
I think he could totally achieve that. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, and that's totally fine. I mean, and I'm sure you're speaking for a lot of people out there. Like, I mean, you know, I think he gets built up in the online film community, but I don't think that he's, you know, very well known or embraced by most of America. Most of America who probably doesn't even know who he is.
Yeah, well, and honestly, why would they? He's done three films that have just really more critical success in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyways. So, for me, it's a total suck, but you give it, what's your fat guy grade? Sucks, rocks, kind of sucks, kind of rocks?
Kind of rocks.
Okay. Well, there we go. That's the Tree of Life. Next, let's talk box office from last week. And the only one that was opening new was X-Men First Class. Did you see that?
No, I haven't. I mean, we were talking about me having a daughter. Like, I just can't get out to the theaters now. So there's so many movies that I haven't seen. I haven't seen Pirates of the Caribbean. I haven't seen Thor. I haven't seen the new X-Men movie. So these are all movies that I'm kind of adding to a list so that when someone offers to come babysit, my wife and I will run out to the movies real fast and go see some of these that we've been, you know, missing as they've premiered.
My wife and I would. What we do is we just, one of us would go out and see it and the other would go out and see another. We just switch it off.
Cause, yeah.
I remember seeing, the first Hulk movie after my second son was born, like that week, just cause I had to review it, but
yeah.
But, you know, and then my wife went out and saw something, so I stayed home with them.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about the new X-Men movie. It seems like it has taken a lot of people by surprise. It probably will take me by surprise because the positive response has taken me by surprise because I feel like it was, you know, a lot of the production art that we saw coming out of it, like the posters and things, everything felt like this movie was going to fail. And, it, you know, after X-Men Origins Wolverine, expectations were pretty low. And so I think... Yeah. Because it's, you know, because it's as it was made as well as it was, and it seems like people are embracing it. You know, I guess the box office that it made is pretty good considering the expectations that were going into it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think one of the things, I think it's an odd world we live in now, where a movie can make $55 million its opening weekend and can be considered a disappointment. Yeah. Sort of like when Pirates made like 90 and they're like, oh, that's not that much. And I'm like, it's $90 million. What are you talking about? How can that be a disappointment? You know?
I mean, I guess they're comparing it to the past X-Men releases and Wolverine. Wolverine made a lot of money that opening weekend. Even though that movie was terrible, it still made a lot.
It was real front loaded. It made like $80 million at first weekend and it like capped out at like 180.
Yeah, so I think people might have been a little wary going into X-Men this weekend.
Yeah, and well, the other thing people forget about Wolverine 2 years ago, it opened the summer season, and in the summer, the first movie to open summer usually does the best, and this year was really Fast Five. Was the first big summer, even though it technically was an April release. It most of its money was made in May.
Yeah.
So that was the first one of the year and of the summer. And then Thor was a dip down, and that's what happened with Wolverine was big. And then Star Trek was a bump down. And I think that's what we're seeing here is there's actually a lot of big, actually decent, fun popcorn movies coming out. And so,
Over the next few weeks, we have things like, you know, like we were talking about Super 8, then there's Green Lantern, the new Transformers movie, Captain America, all kinds of big ones.
Yeah. Whereas like in 2009, you had Wolverine that opened it up, then you had Star Trek, and then you had nothing. I mean, you had big movies like Land of the Lost, but nobody saw that bombed.
And, well, there and was then, like, the Transformers 2 came out that summer.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was like this dearth of no hits, and then Transformers 2 hit, and that kind of just saved the summer.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, X-Men made $55 million its opening weekend. Hangover Part 2 dropped 60-some percent to about a little over $30 million. And then Kung Fu Panda, which I'm sort of disappointed that Kung Fu Panda isn't doing as well as it should.
This will probably be like one of those home video releases that does really well for a long time.
Yeah, and I think it's also going to have longevity through the summer.
Yeah,
because it's big, sort of animated competition is Cars 2, which is going to get the family market, but I think Kung Fu Panda is still doing. I think it's hurt by higher ticket prices. Mm-hmm. When people wanting to bring like five kids to it.
Sure.
So. I actually think it's going to do better when it starts losing, when like next weekend, when it loses some of its 3D screens to Green Lantern.
Yeah,
I actually think that's going to level it out better, and it'll stay through the summer. What do you think's going to? What do you think? What are your thoughts on what's going to win this weekend in the box office? Do you think Tree of Life's going to just swoop down?
Well, do you have any idea of how many theaters it's expanding to? I think right now it's just New York and LA, and then
Tree of Life specifically.
Yeah. Well, I guess like, okay. Is it opening? It's not opening in like super wide release this weekend.
No, I think it's doing the wider release later. It's just there's some key markets. It's sort of doing this slow expansion.
I mean, from what I've read, it seems like Tree of Life is doing well per screen. So I guess you know, I hope that it does well. I mean, personally, just because I enjoyed it.
That was really just a joke. I really don't. I don't think it's any. The wider it goes, the less it'll do, and that's just because it's not a mainstream movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nobody should expect it to be.
I mean, I guess this weekend is just the Judy Moody and Super 8. Are those the two big ones that are?
Those are the two new ones. Yeah, Judy Moody and Super 8. Judy Moody's in 2,000 screens. Super 8's in 3,200.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope that Super 8 does well. I just have this nagging feeling that it's not going to do well, and I hope. But I mean, it seems like we need to reward these movies that are going out and creating, you know, new material from, you know, not previously written or produced stuff. And I just hope that people go out and see it. I hope that they're brave enough to, like, you know, trust their instincts and go see something like this instead of just being, you know, force-fed tons of advertising and knowing everything about a movie before they go see it.
There's two schools of thought that would skew it in either direction. There's the whole thing that people would say, well, it's not a franchise film. It's not recognizable. You know, it's not like X-Men or Pirates, but both of those are Kung Fu Panda. All those are sequels with established characters, but they performed lower than expectations.
Yeah.
The other school of thought is to say it's something different. It's something new. And actually, 2011 has been a great year for new original films. You got stuff like, you know, Source Code and The Adjustment Bureau, which is based on a book, but it's still, it's not a franchise. You had Paul. You had all these films, especially in the spring, that were different and not sequels and not reboots and remakes, although those didn't tend to do well. The ones that are killing in the box office are Fast Five and Pirates, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be something along the lines of Inception, where you have a somewhat famous filmmaker producing their own kind of new material. And yeah. I think Inception did pretty well last year.
Yeah, but Inception had a box office run. I mean, not as enormous, but similar to Avatar, where it did okay, and it just had a good steady 3-4 weeks. Well, Avatar had like 12, but Inception had 3 or 4 weeks where it just had a solid play. But it did not open. It did not open with Dark Knight numbers, and it didn't. You know, it wasn't this because it wasn't that franchise, but it just stayed in the theater. I think Super 8's at least primed to do that, but I wouldn't expect it to make much more than $50 million or so.
Yeah, and hopefully this will be something where there is good word of mouth and that it'll build over a few weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, if the some of the people at my screening locally is any indication, it'll do really well with the Walmart crowd. There are some creepy people in that screening. Oh my! I actually literally moved because there were people who sat right behind me. I'm just like, they're going to be insane. They're going to be talking through the whole thing, kicking my seat, even though it was an aisle, so they would have had to get up, walk, and kick the seat.
Oh man, that's a tricky thing. You have to make that decision really fast in order to get to a new open seat for some of those public screenings.
This is the kid who was this kid running around with no shoes on because he had flip flops, and his parents weren't watching him, or his mom wasn't watching him. I was at one end of the aisle, and it's one of those big theaters, so it was like, you know, maybe 20 seats across, and he was at the far other side. He decides to go through the aisle to get to the other end, not walk around 6 inches behind me and go around. That's the kind of inconsiderate SOBs that were.
Well, at least it didn't ruin the whole experience for you.
No, because I moved. I'm just like, I am not sitting next to these guys. Because literally, and I was telling this in show prep, but I'll share this with the audience. I got, because the reps will let us in early, so I sat down, and I'm there with my son, who's going to be 8 next week. So, but they know how to behave. My kids know how to behave in the theater. So I'm sitting there waiting, and this family comes in. It's this woman with like 9,000 kids in tow, and she's like, another woman's coming in behind her with like another 9,000 kids. She's like, where you want to sit? And just yell at her. Now the movie hadn't started yet, sure, but if you're going to be that obnoxious, she's like, I don't want to sit. No, I don't. I want to sit there. Let's sit up there. And I'm just like, oh my God. And the kid is bouncing around and climbing on the bars and everything. And I'm just like, please fall so that you can go to the emergency room. I don't want you to really get seriously hurt, but I want you to get hurt enough that your mom leaves. So, yeah. Okay, now I've alienated my own hometown. No, I think Super 8 will do well, but it's not going to be. Everyone's looking for that $100 million weekend. I don't think we're going to get that. I think, well, we got that with Hangover 2, but it took 5 days to get that $130 million. And I think you're going to see the same thing with Transformers. But I just don't see this summer being any. I don't see any movie this summer making $100 million over 3 days.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. You know, who knows when the next movie like that will come around. I mean, it might take, I don't know, maybe The Hobbit. Who knows? Like, maybe The Avengers. You know, it'll take something really big, and it'll take a lot of building up to get to that point again.
Yeah, and I think, but I still think the box office for the summer is going to be good. I think we're going to have a lot of good movies, but there's a lot of choices. I think this has already been. We're 1 month in. It's already a really good summer for if you like the big budget movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So next we're going to move on. We have a listener question. We actually talked about this on the Idiot Boxers. I thought I'd throw this out here too because we do not have, it's not a voicemail. It's somebody who asked me a question via Facebook. That'd be Evan. And he wanted to know who'd win in a fight, Miley Cyrus or Po from Kung Fu Panda. Who do you think?
Ryan? Well, you know, I think if it was a one-on-one, I would have to go with Po. Although, you know, if she had, you know, her legions of fans at her disposal, I have to imagine that Miley Cyrus could throw, you know, millions of little girls at Po and, you know, drown him in a sea of kids. So I think she might have a little bit more power than he does.
Yeah, here's the thing. It all depends. There's contingency here. If it's Po and the Fast and the Furious Five, I think he could take care of Miley Cyrus. However, if it's Po, and maybe after he's had a big meal And if Miley Cyrus has smoked some semi-legal herb in her bong, I think she might be able to kick his ass.
Yeah. You know, I actually have never seen or listened to anything that Miley Cyrus has done. I just know of her and, you know, have, you know, tangentially seen stuff online. So, you know, I don't really know that much about her, but I have I just have to imagine that. Like,
I don't have a problem with Miley Cyrus. Again, trust me, you're going to... Well, I mean, it won't be Miley Cyrus, but in about 10 or 11 years, you're going to have, you know, plenty of whatever the new version of Miley Cyrus is, next decade's Miley Cyrus in your life.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Anyways, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. And this is five ensemble kids movies, of course, in honor of Super 8, which has a fantastic cast of kids. Do you want to do you can do the first one. You seem like a guy who loved this movie.
Oh yeah. And I happen to live in the state where it was shot. So the first movie is The Goonies. You know, let's see, when was The Goonies released?
1985.
So, I mean, this is a classic movie for kids who grew up during the 80s, just because, you know, if you grew up then, you would relate to one of the number of characters. You know, in some way, there's a character there for, like, every kind of kid type, or at least mostly boy types, I guess. There's a few girl characters in there, but, you
unless
know.
Unless you relate to Martha Plimpton. Or the old woman with no teeth. You know, you got slim pickings there if you're a girl.
Yeah, but I think this movie, I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of people of my generation revisit this movie and say that it's terrible. I've watched it within the last 5 years, I'd say, and I still enjoy it.
Can I ask how old you are? I don't know your actual age. I mean, were you like, did you see this in the theater when you were like 10?
I was born in 1980, so I was 5 when this was out. Probably saw it. I don't think I saw this in theaters. I probably saw it either on TV or on VHS.
Well, that's the thing I know is a lot of people love this movie who are, because I was 14. No, I was 13 when the movie, when the actual movie came out, I was 13. Because it came out in the summer of 1985. I was just a little bit too old to really enjoy it then, but like kids who are a little bit younger than me loved it. But I've noticed that kids are like maybe 10 years younger than me, they love it as well because it was like a staple on HBO for the mid 90s. And that's probably where you saw it.
Yeah, that's probably where I saw it. And I know that the whole, like, there's that whole squid sequence that's been, you know, like, taken out and put back in home video releases. And so I know that that was one that was, like, one part of the movie that I feel like I didn't see when it was first on HBO, but then put back in later on in, like, home video or something.
Yeah. It's one of these movies that really, it's, I and I've said this, I've talked about The Goonies several times on the show. It's not a great film, but it's a film for a very specific person and a generation. Yeah. And I don't mean generation by being from the 80s. I've showed it to my kids and they love it. And it's fun to watch. It's far from perfect. It's got so many problems to it. It's so ridiculous at times. But it's still enjoyable and fun. And there's a lot of nostalgia that goes along with it. So yeah, The Goonies. The Goonies is what I thought of when I watched Super 8.
Yeah. And I mean, I live in Oregon and it was shot out in Astoria. And so we've actually driven out to Astoria and kind of seen the house that it was shot at. And you can, you know, if you drive along the Oregon coast, you'll pick up on the spots where
find an old shack and go down and try and find a pirate treasure?
I did not, but you know, maybe I'll take my daughter on an adventure out there one day.
Did you try to do like a zip line with like fishing wire? That would have been funny. Well, it would have been another trip to the hospital there, I guess. I'm going to throw out the next one, which is the Little Rascals or Our Gang, either one. I mean, they're both. There are different groups, but again, you know, Spanky and Buckwheat and Alfalfa. And a big reason I put these in there is because we needed something that was older. Because ensemble kids have been in movies all the time.
Sure. This was something that was, you know, short films of like 20s, 30s, and 40s. But then they had that 1994 adaptation that Amblin put out.
Oh, so I don't count that. I don't count. That's like the, you know, I don't know. That's like a stepfather. That's like, my mom got divorced and this is the drunk that she's living with now. And I'm like, no, that's not my dad.
Yeah. I guess that would be kind of like talking about Dennis the Menace, but like, oh no, I mean the movie, you know, not the comic strip or the cartoon or, you know, like the older TV show. Like, I mean this movie.
You know what? This discussion reminds me of. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again real quick. I was at a screening for Prince of Persia last summer, and there's this people I know who, like, the son of one of the reps was there, and he had his friends from school, and this girl was, she was 17 or 18, and she mentioned, somehow we got into the subject of Romeo and Juliet, and she mentions, like, oh, I like that. I said, which version? And she goes, the famous one. And I'm like, I would contend that Shakespeare's original play is probably the most famous one. Which one are you talking about? She's like, oh, the one with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. And I'm like, oh, you're so young. So
I guess that's what comes with growing old.
That's true. Do you want to do the next one?
Sure. The next one, Stand By Me, another classic from the 80s. This one, you know, 1986, directed by Rob Reiner. It's got, you know, Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell, Kiefer Sutherland, like a whole, like, you know, these are a lot of the actors that are still, you know, we're still watching today. It influenced, I would imagine, a lot of young boys' childhoods. And this, oh, yeah. But I guess, like, for you, was this another one where you were a little too old for it when it was out in theaters?
No, I was perfect age for it.
Yeah,
I was perfect age for it. In fact, this is sort of a morbid story. A friend of mine got it out, and it was like he had a friend that had died in a car accident, like a really good friend who died in a car accident, like the year before. And I was over at his house, and we got it out to watch. And I just wasn't even thinking. It's a dead kid. And it's like he had actually left the room at the end. So it's very touching. And actually, I was older than the kids were in the movie, but it was one of those rare films that you actually could skew your, because normally you skew up, you know, 10-year-olds love the Goonies because it was about 13-year-olds. No 13-year-old watched the Goonies and loved it because those were kids.
Yeah.
You know, 13-year-olds watch movies about kids in high school,
right?
And so that's the thing, but Stand By Me, it could skew, I was able to skew down because it I could relate to it. It was so well written, and so that's, so yeah, it's a great ensemble cast. And you know what's funny is I just watched Platoon the other night. This actually has relevance to it. When you watch Platoon, they're talking about the movie in the behind the scenes, and they talk about how there are no stars in it. But if you watch the movie, it's just loaded with stars. I mean, it's got big stars like Charlie Sheen in pre-crazy mode. It's got people like Johnny Depp in it, and it's got John C. McGinley, and you know, just and Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger. These are people that had some careers, but these were they were not big names at the time.
Yeah.
They even have secondary people like Keith David and Tony Todd is in it, and Forrest Whitaker. I mean, so it's just nonstop parade of famous people.
Yeah.
But they're only famous now. Same thing. Apocalypse Now is sort of the same way because you got Lawrence Fishburne before he was famous. And that's the way Stand By Me was. I mean, Will Wheaton, nobody really knew who he was. And nobody knew who it was. River Phoenix, one of his first movies. And, you know, Corey Feldman had a bit of a career. He was probably the most famous one there. But Jerry O'Connell, that was one of the first things he did.
Oh, yeah.
And Kiefer Sutherland, that was another one. That's one that put him on the map. So... let's move on to the next one, and that would be E.T.
Now, this again. Is one, yeah, this is, I mean, a classic one. This is what a lot of people, like you, even you were saying, like, this is what people think of when they go to watch Super 8, is they're going to think of something like E.T.
Yeah. Well, it's because any movie that involves kids riding bikes, you're going to suddenly think it's E.T. because it's so iconic. And it's a small town. Again, very similar to Goonies and E.T. Super 8 is, but yeah, it has, I kept having flashbacks to both Goonies and Super 8. It was Goonies and E.T. during Super 8.
So. Yeah, this is a movie that I definitely grew up with also. I don't know if I saw this in theaters, but I know that I watched it a lot, like, you know, on TV or on video as a kid. You know,
seen it in like a re-release? Because you would have been too, if it came out in 82, you would have been.
Oh yeah, it must have been a re-release or something. Yeah. But I know that I saw it, you know, I definitely grew up with it being around, and like, you know, the whole Reese's Pieces thing. And yeah, it was definitely one that I grew up with. I was, you know, I guess there's that little whole like mini controversy of the fact that Steven Spielberg went back and kind of digitally re-enhanced some scenes and added stuff later on for that DVD release. So
yeah, which is a little odd. Oh, excuse me, I'm tired. It's late. I'm sorry. It's nothing against you, Ryan. Do you know what's funny about the Reese's Pieces? Do you know, I had heard that M&M's, they had approached M&M's initially to do it.
Yeah, I've heard that story too, and they told them no.
Yeah, and they now scoffed at it.
Yeah.
And the Reese's Pieces. And it's honestly, the only reason Reese's Pieces still exist is because it got so popular with that movie.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So, E.T. was great. And then you can take the last one.
The last one is The Monster Squad. Now, yes. This is a movie that I remember seeing when I was a kid and being pretty scared of it.
It's intense.
Yeah. This is one of the movies, though, that I saw as a kid and I had fond memories of it. But when it was finally released on DVD, and it took a long time and people were kind of like clamoring for this to be released on DVD. And when it finally was, I didn't really like it that much. I kind of found that it was, you know, maybe a little bit more offensive than I remembered it. There's a lot of a lot of disparaging remarks, a lot of slurs being thrown around, and I found myself like kind of cringing at some of the dialogue and thinking like, man, was I really into this as a kid? But I guess I didn't know any better, and I was mostly just interested in the monsters that they had created. I mean, it's a cool idea.
It's not a politically correct movie. No, it's not. It's not at all.
It's just, I guess, like, for me, the idea of it, like, you know, the fact that they're using all these classic monsters like Dracula, Frankenstein, the Mummy, like all these characters, and the werewolves and stuff, and the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Wolfman's got nards.
it's a cool idea, and the fact that there's kids in it who have to like kind of stand up against Dracula is a cool idea. But I guess for me, like, it didn't really stand up to the test of time. But it's, you know, definitely the type of movie that will shape the kids of the 80s, because, you know, this alongside the Goonies, I mean, it's kind of very similar to the Goonies in a lot of ways.
It's the Goonies. Instead of going treasure hunting, they're fighting monsters.
Exactly.
Really. It was funny. I was out at Comic-Con in 2008. Was it 2008 or 2007? May have been 2007 when they did the I think it was 2007, because it was the 20th anniversary release on DVD. And I got a chance to interview all the people, like, you know, Fred Decker and the cast, the remaining cast. Because the kid who did the Nards, he died. The kid who played the one who says the famous line,
yeah,
the little chubby kid, he ended up dying from something, but you know, it was funny, the girl who played the little girl, she was cute, she kind of grew up nice in a very adorable way. I sound so creepy now, but no, seriously, she's like in her 20s, and it was only slightly creepy because I'm like 10 years older than her, but but yeah, it has a lot of love in the fanboy community. I watched it on DVD. I thought it was okay. Again, it has that, it's a Goonies movie, so it doesn't quite hold up if you were watching it for the first time in your 30s. And then I showed it to my kids, and they got terrified of the monsters. They were a little too young for that.
Yeah, I probably will have the same kind of experience showing it to my daughter. I'm sure she'll be terrified by it. But
she'll be like 3. You'll be like, "You will watch this? No, Daddy, no." Stay away from boys. This is what will happen. They have monsters all over the place. A couple honorable mentions. You had mentioned in the show a Harry Potter franchise.
Yeah, I think this is one. You know, I don't know if people consider this, an ensemble cast or a kids ensemble cast movie.
Because in their 30s now.
Yeah, I mean, like, but it's amazing that this is probably the most successful ensemble kids franchise over the past 10 years. I mean, it's essentially like defined this type of movie over the 2000s, where like the first one was in 2001, and now we're getting the last one, you know, the last two, I guess, in 2011. So it's been like 10 years of this franchise. We've watched these kids grow up from kids. And those first movies are very, you know, kind of like Amblin style, where they're solving mysteries and they're going on adventures, and you know, they're all kind of like outcasts in some ways.
So it's really dark in the later films where they grow up. But yeah, you're right, those first couple movies, partly because they're directed by Chris Columbus, which is a good and bad thing, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, and I don't think that those movies, those first ones, I don't think they necessarily, like, they don't talk down to kids or anything. I think they're good movies for kids to grow up with.
Yeah. Another one that's great to show your kids, I guess, would be another one you mentioned in show prep was Kids. I'm kidding. Oh, yeah. It's not a good movie for kids.
No, but that was, I was just thinking of like
date rape and drugs and Saxon.
It is definitely not the kids ensemble type of movie that you will associate when you go see Super 8 this weekend. I don't think so.
But it did give us Chloe Sevigny and Rosario Dawson.
Exactly.
So there's also, you mentioned The Land Before Time.
It's a, you know, an animated, and they're like, you know, kid dinosaurs, but it's essentially like another 80s kind of ensemble kids movie that I think helped define a lot of people's ideas in terms of, like, you know, animated films got a lot of kids excited about dinosaurs.
They're still making them, man.
Do you know that? Oh, I know. I definitely.
It's like The Land Before Time 17. It's like porno movies. There's like so many of them.
It is amazing how they've managed to stretch that franchise out, but.
Yeah. You know. I'll tell you, when my youngest was like three, or my oldest was three, because my youngest is three now, but when my oldest was three, he was really into dinosaurs, and we tried to find those the resale value of Land Before Time videos is insane, because everybody wants them for every generation.
Yeah, that's like a lot of the Disney movies. They're expensive no matter like where you try to find them, like used or not, they're all expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yet like something like Avatar, you can get like $5 used, like the 3-disc edition, because they made so many of them. And the last one I want to mention, the reason this is an honorable mention is because it was a TV movie, was Stephen King's It. And you had said you'd seen bits and pieces of it.
I'm pretty sure I saw it as a kid, but I have very faint memory of it. I mean, I just kind of remember, the scary clown.
It aired when you were about 10. Yeah, well, Tim Curry played the clown. He was fantastic as Pennywise. He was the best part of the show.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with it, for the audience out there, if you're not familiar with it, it tells two different stories. It's based on a Stephen King novel, and it tells the story of a group of kids, and then it also simultaneously in the book tells the story of the kids as adults as they kind of come back to town to deal with this evil clown spirit that's haunting the town. And the adult cast has a lot of, maybe not huge names, but recognizable names. It has John Ritter was in it, Annette O'Toole, it had Harry Anderson, it had the guy who played Willard and then later played the senator in the X-Men movies, whatever his name was, and John Boy from the Waltons. So it had all these names of, like, recognizable names, especially in TV. And they sucked balls at their roles. They all sucked. Every single one of them. It was the worst casting and worst acting of all. Yet the kids were phenomenal. And the one who, Seth Green actually played one of the kids before he was known at all, before he did Robot Chicken and the Austin Powers movies. So he was like a teenager, an awkward teenager. And they were awesome. And that's why it's so good, because the child cast was fantastic. And then you get to the adult cast and you're just like, I'm done watching.
So. Now, this is a movie, I feel like last year it was announced that there was going to be a remake of it, but I haven't heard, or maybe a couple years ago, but it seems like I haven't heard anything about a remake being released.
I've not heard that. I've heard about the Carrie remakes, the talk about remaking Carrie, and of course they're doing the Dark Tower series. I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to wait to see what happens with the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
And if that does well, they're going to just recycle every single Stephen King property and put it on the big screen. I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, but I would love to see them redo it. But again, it's got to be cast right, because the adults were so awful. I'd love to see him bring back Tim Curry, though. All right. I think that's it. We better get going. We've had a long middle segment, so.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah, we'll come back and do DVDs and then get out of here.
Sounds good.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. If you're listening on the radio, you can go back to the internet. Actually, it's a relatively clean segment. That's twice. Twice we've had 2 weeks in a row where we have relatively clean middle segments. I apologize to all my fans out there. Expect me to make dirty jokes. I promise next week I will get back to making dirty jokes. But until then, we are going to be looking at some new things. But it's an interesting segment. We review Tree of Life. We talk about box office, how well Super 8's going to do. We also do a nice little segment in there about the Fat Guy 5 of 5 ensemble kids movies. But now we're in the last segment. So what time is it now?
It is time for the world famous DVD roundup.
Thing. Returning guests are so easy on this. I'll let you go first. Tell me what DVDs or Blu-rays are sort of catching your eye for that were released this week, which would have been June 7th.
Well, this past week, Warner Brothers has been putting out a series of animated films related to some of their DC characters. So they've done, you know, various Batman movies, various Superman movies. Last year, they put out a Green Lantern movie called First Flight, and I really enjoyed it a lot. It was kind of the story of Hal Jordan, and kind of it was, you know, in some ways testing the waters for the upcoming Green Lantern movie.
Did you read Green Lantern comics?
Oh yeah, I read them as a kid, so I was aware of the characters and you know, the mythology. I haven't read any of the recent arcs of Green Lantern, but it's something that I'm familiar with, and it was a character that I liked a lot. This past week, they just released, you know, a new kind of chapter in the Green Lantern animated series where it's called Emerald Knights. And it's kind of an anthology movie where they go around and tell you different stories from the Green Lantern, you know, universe. Hal Jordan is in it as a kind of like a through line character who's telling his, you know, his young apprentice various stories from the Green Lantern mythology. So you get to meet lots of different characters, go to different alien worlds. It's really cool. If you enjoyed the First Flight movie, you'll enjoy it a lot. If you enjoyed the other DC ones, like the Justice League movie that they made, or the Batman Under the Red Hood, all of those movies are really enjoyable. Yeah, definitely. There's no Criterion Collection release this week, but last week there was a new updated re-release of Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator.
Hitler movie.
Yes, the Hitler movie. It is an amazing release. Criterion has the distribution rights for a number of Chaplin movies. So last fall they put out Modern Times, and it was a pretty incredible release. They just did Great Dictator. We actually just covered it on the podcast on Friday, so that episode will be going up probably around the same time that this episode goes up, so you can go check out our discussion there. It's an amazing release. They put a lot of documentaries on there.
Do they have on the cover, does it say like, I loved the movie, a classic Adolf Hitler? Because apparently he loved this movie.
That is true. In the documentary that I saw, they actually talk about how he requested, you know, copies be sent to him so that he could watch it, you know, on more than one occasion. And that's pretty incredible given the, you know, given the scathing nature of how he takes him down as a.
I gotta take a break from killing all the Jews. Let me get a few laughs from Charlie Chaplin.
But yeah, it's a really great release. You know, Criterion has done it really well. The transfer looks amazing, and there's lots of supplements to help your experience from this film.
Great, great. The ones I want to point out, a bunch of them. True Grit, great movie, one of the best movies of last year. Great adaptation and remake. Actually, there's also Sanctum, which was shot in 3D. It's now available on 3D Blu-ray, but also regular Blu-ray and 2D. And it's not a great film. It's a little cheesy, but it's a neat little, you know, man against nature type thing where people have to dive in an underwater cave to escape it. There's also the Superman movies on Blu-ray. not to say that all the Superman movies are good, because in general, the Superman movies are batting about 200.
Yeah.
You know, there's the first one, which was okay, but very wacky 70s, and the second one, same thing, but even wackier, and then the third one, you got Richard Pryor, and the fourth one, they like drop acid, and then you have Superman Returns. I can't recall if Supergirl is thrown in there as well.
I don't think she is. Supergirl the movie?
Yeah, I don't know whether that's... That would be good or bad to have. I don't know. I'm not stampeding to the store to get Supergirl on Blu-ray. They're also releasing Adam Sandler, old Adam Sandler movies, Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore and Bulletproof, all on Blu-ray this week. Which those are his good movies. Then he made other crap like the one that's going to be the stinker. There's American, the Bill Hicks story, which is out from Warner, and then some TV from USA Networks. You got White Collar Season 2 and Burn Notice Season 4, two good shows to check out. White Collar I like a little bit better because they got this lame new character named Jesse on Burn Notice. But then the stinker is Just Go With It. This is one of Adam Sandler's bad movies. shame on your movie, because it's terrible.
And this is the movie that kind of like has recently caused quite a furor in that it was released on home distribution, like on demand, you know, within a couple months or much earlier than usual. So a lot of the theater owners were kind of upset with it, I think.
Well, sadly, though, it didn't affect his box office. It didn't do very well. Anyways, review wrap up. Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer get a preemptive suck. Super 8 gets a totally rocks. Tree of Life, we split the vote. I said it totally sucks. and Ryan said it kind of rocked. Next week, we have Green Lantern, the actual Green Lantern movie, which is my most anticipated movie of the summer.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it also.
I'm so excited to see it. I'm ridiculously excited. And then Mr. Popper's Penguins, not so ridiculously excited to see that, but I'll be taking my kids, so hopefully they like it. Anyways, Fat Guys in the Movies, check us out, or you can find Ryan. Ryan, tell us real quickly where to get you.
You can find everything at CriterionCast.com.
Awesome. Wow, that was easy. I gave you way more time than you needed for that. Thank you again, Ryan, for doing it. Congratulations on the birth of your daughter.
Thank you.
And we will definitely have you on again. And, you know, for everybody else, thanks for listening. Check out our other podcasts. And, yeah, go to hover.com/fatguys to get a cheap URL.